favorite sport. I like the way they dribble up and down the court. I keep it so fresh on the microphone. I like no interruption when the game is on. I like slam dunk to take me to the hoop.
It's time for Podzilla 1985 Sports on your Podzilla 1985 network. I am Cody Sandusky. Glad to have you with us today. It is Saturday, April 2nd, 2016. Another interesting week on the docket in terms of sports action, and we'll cover some of that for today. It's going to be an abbreviated episode, about 45 minutes this time around. One, wanting to tinker with a few things, and two, also some personal events going on in my life and a few of our other lives here today that kind of begets us needing to shorten it a little bit. Hopefully you're not too disappointed. We should be back to the hour format in the next week or two. But today we've got some interesting news, interesting discussions to have, starting, of course, with the UFC event coming up and very big news on both fronts of the Cormier-Jones title fight, that light heavyweight championship fight. One of them, understandably so, and happens a bit often in sports preparation. The other one, not so much, and spells maybe some more trouble for the young man in question. We'll get into that. The NCAA Final Four is this weekend. Both the men's and women's. For the men will be the focus for us. By the time you hear this podcast, of course, we recorded at 10 a.m. or so on Saturday, sometimes on Friday nights, but we know the Final Four matchups are Villanova versus Oklahoma and North Carolina versus Syracuse. You may already know who the national championship participants are. We don't have that benefit yet. It's the beauty of recording and then posting later. It's the fun trick behind the scenes and kind of leaves us a little bit out of the loop depending on our time of discussion. But we will go into our predictions and discussions about that, as well as a focus on what social media can do for the athlete, good, bad, or indifferent. We have some news concerning Chris Paul and his wife. There's a big situation involving social media and a threat placed upon their lives, or at least his wife's life, this week. And we want to discuss that a little bit, kind of see how social media plays into an athlete. Are there benefits to participating in social media, and kind of what nature, what mentality some people adopt when being behind a keyboard and being anonymous, or as anonymous as you can be with social media? Of course, I am here. I am Cody Sandusky, and we have alongside Tanner Calvert on the podcast again. Tanner, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. Trying to keep up with this morning. It's been kind of hectic.
Understood. It's been kind of a crazy week. I know, it's acknowledged just a minute ago, it's been pretty busy for us, and we were actually off the air last week for a personal situation in your life and kind of an inverse, a family friend of mine passing away this week. So we're going to go ahead and attend the viewing for that. It's part of the reason for the abbreviated recording this week, but hopefully still some good stuff. And maybe I say more cheery things, but for two of the three topics I've already addressed,
yeah, it's
not so cheery.
Not so much.
Not so much.
I mean, there's not a whole lot to talk about. I thought some of the things you've brought to the table is kind of interesting, but like, baseball starts tomorrow.
Right.
That's pretty exciting.
We'll have definitely covering that over the next week or so. I know, yeah. I might be finding some ways to discuss that over next week.
And the big topic, I guess, would be the Final Four.
Yeah, and that's the thing we will hit. But we're going to go ahead and jump into the situation that I addressed at the start of the preview here. It's Daniel Cormier and John Jones. It's UFC 197. Is the fight going on. They were supposed to be the main event for the light heavyweight title. In case you're unfamiliar with the build-up to this point, John Jones was the light heavyweight title winner. He won it off of Daniel Cormier a couple years ago. It was January 2015. He then had the belt stripped from him due to a few situations legally. He had some cocaine, had a hit-and-run, not the best docket of police proceedings for John Jones. So Daniel Cormier's been fighting for the title and been holding it. Now, Daniel Cormier comes in this week. He has suffered an injury that will hold him out of the fight against John Jones. Mind you, this fight is April 23rd, so it's 3 weeks away. About the same window time, honestly, as the Conor McGregor, Rafael Dos Anjos situation, where they replaced him with Nate Diaz. And, of course, you saw how that turned out for Mr. McGregor. But Cormier, from what it's told, there have been reports, and people are trying to confirm it, that Cormier was at a wrestling match and could barely walk on his left leg.
Mm.
So, of course, Cormier being a talented fighter, of course, someone who's comfortable with going to the ground, that's not a good sign for you if you're obviously one of your legs is not going to benefit you in a fight. You can't do it. It's just not possible.
The biggest downside of that, especially for somebody like John Jones, that's a title fight he's not going to be able to have.
Yeah.
So he's literally losing the chance to get the belt.
Yeah. And this is a situation that in that fight in January 2015 at UFC 182, Cormier came in at 15-0. And he was really just running that light heavyweight division. John Jones comes in, picks up a unanimous decision to take that title, and then hasn't had a fight since. So it's literally been 15 months since John Jones has had a fight. And John Jones, for his own right, almost lost the fight himself in terms of the opportunity to fight it. He was pulled over. He's been hit with multiple accusations and a few confirmations that the big one, he was drag racing in the area where he was training, was pulled over and basically called the cop a liar and said, "I was not drag racing," and mouthed off to the police officer. So insubordinate in terms of authority on that one. He was arrested for it. He's being given an opportunity to take a driving course, anger management courses, and he's going to get out of that without jail time. So that's what's being worked on in that. It was a violation of his probation to be arrested for that. And the big thing for that is it sucks, yes, because this is a big fight I think everyone was very excited for. I was very excited for it. I know, and I noted it a little bit earlier.
That would have been a fun fight.
It would have been, and it will be, I think, if eventually, it happens. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully it does happen. Right now, that does push Demetrius Johnson and Henry Cejudo up to the main event. They were the co-main event. I know we talked about it a few weeks ago. Seeing Demetrius Johnson in some of those lighter divisions, I'm really excited that they now get to head a card. Not by the means that this happened. I don't want to see a guy get hurt and a guy continue to be an idiot to cause this to be the main event of a pay-per-view, but sometimes you got to take it as you get it. And this is a fight that, much like the McGregor and, well, Diaz slash Dos Anjos situation, much like the McGregor-Aldo situation, this is a fight that was getting pretty hype, and these guys were, there was no love lost between these two when it came to the preliminaries up to the fight, you know, the press conference, things like that. These guys have shown they're pissed at each other. They wanted to get something on the other person, and now neither one has the opportunity, but of the two, now mind you, Daniel Cormier is 37 years old, so even in mixed martial arts where your prime or your time to fight can be extended a little bit more than traditional sports, he's getting toward the end of his career. I mean, at the end of his competitive career, let's say that. I mean, I'm sure he could pull a situation where he's like a Randy Couture, where he could fight until he's like 45 years old, but he's not necessarily going to be contending for titles. So the fact that this window is closing for him is one thing, but John Jones is 28 years old. This guy is literally in the prime of his career, and he's already lost a year and a quarter of that career due to stupid decisions involving drugs and poor driving. So he already has set a precedent for himself for making some bad decisions. He comes back 15 months later. You are ready to move forward. And reports have said that he was pulled over two or three times last week, including the situation where he told a cop he wasn't drag racing, called him a liar, and got arrested for it. You would think that a cocaine and hit and run arrest would be a wake-up call for somebody. Would think this time, and he's...
Not with him, apparently.
Not with him. And that was the thing. I want to say at times he's presented this image of being someone who got it and he wanted to make up for the mistake. Not really. There have been other cases where you've seen, and obviously the tape from this situation showing that to be true, that he doesn't care. Like, he doesn't seem to have a lot of accountability for his situation. And that's terrifying for a guy that, you know, let's just even exclude the sports for a minute. A guy who has the potential to be a face of, you know, this organization, do great work, be a great charitable individual. He's showing he's irresponsible and has no desire to really make up for his bad decisions.
Well, how many times do we see this in young athletes today?
Too much.
John Jones, Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel was pegged to be the face of the Cleveland Browns when he first came up.
Yep.
And he couldn't get his head on straight. And look at him now. He's without a team. Nobody wants him.
I don't think anyone wants anything near him, to be honest with you.
And if I hate to say it because he's such a great fighter, but it's going to come to the point where Dana White's just going to give an ultimatum, you know, either straighten up or leave.
Yeah, because he's, now mind you, Dana White's in a bit of a tough situation for himself concerning his two faces of the organization, the two faces of the new video game, Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor taking losses and not being as promotable as they were when they were undefeated and running their way roughshod through the divisions, but there's no shortage of athletes coming to mixed martial arts, and there's no shortage of people that Dana White can promote. Yes, John Jones was a favorable athlete in that. Of course, he was the face of UFC's Adidas line. Like, he was promoting their shoes, had great commercials. He was going to become a marketable face for this group, and someone who, while you have your Conor McGregors, who can be marketable, who can sell products, he's a very brash individual when he's on the stage ready to fight. Otherwise, he's a very reserved individual. He likes to be in the gym. He likes to work hard. He likes to kind of, from what it seems, stay in relative silence.
Yeah.
John Jones wasn't like that. John Jones was the type of person who could go to a press conference. He was the kind of guy who would want to go in to commercial shoots, want to go on to radio and television spots to discuss a product or discuss the future fights. He was someone you could market, and UFC, those are admittedly in short supply. You have guys who can drum up the fight really well, but you don't have a lot of these guys who are going to be faces for the media. Nate Diaz, good, bad, or indifferent as a fighter, is not a guy you're taking to SportsCenter to promote. He's not a guy you're taking to New York radio stations to talk about stuff.
No.
It just isn't it. And that's nothing wrong with it. That's just the fact of the matter.
Yeah. This isn't the WWE.
Yeah. You can't run most of your guys around the media circus in the UFC. It's just not feasible. They're not comfortable with it. Again, nothing wrong with it. Just the fact of the matter. John Jones was that. John Jones could potentially still be that.
But he's got
a lot of work to do, and he's got to get his head on straight now. I don't think there's any more time to work with that. I think he's already costing himself the prime as fighting career, and he's also costing himself being the face of an organization and a very popular one at that.
Yeah. And that's what I don't understand. I guess I kind of understand it. You have the world on your string. You own the world when you're hyped up as much, especially as John Jones was before all this happened. And the man could literally have anything he wanted.
Yeah.
And he took full advantage of it to the point where he's now in hot water constantly. And it's one of those things where he thinks he's such a big deal that he can't be touched. And honestly, this whole bargaining deal where he has to go to driving school and anger management and all that just to get out of this, the most recent stint, is silly. Put him away. I feel so bad saying it, but people like him, the only way they're going to learn to stop doing what they're doing is by accepting the punishment that they're given.
Yeah.
And not just letting them get away with it constantly.
Yeah, the stipulations of his, what it was is essentially it's new rules, the stipulations on his probation. This came from New Mexico's 2nd Judicial District Court and Judge Michael Martinez. The rules are currently he has to get permission to drive from his probation officer. Anytime he wants to drive, he wants to have approval. He has to take anger management courses, driver improvement courses, and do 60 more hours of community service within 3 months. He already had a line of community service hours for the initial bust. And the discussion that Michael Martinez told him, and I think this is the big thing that kind of alludes to what you said, and this is quoting from MMAfighting.com and also discussed on Bleacher Report. Martinez told Jones at the conclusion of the hearing that if he is back in this court before the end of his probation, quote, it won't go well for him, unquote.
And that's something that probably needs to happen if it happens again.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. If he makes another boneheaded decision, if John Jones makes another misstep, and I don't even think it's going to take a lot to be a misstep. He drives one time without permission from his probation officer, he's going for a year. And I'm not talking to a fun place. I'm talking about prison. I'm talking about jail. And I agree with you. It sucks that it has to be that way. But some people, humans can be very thick-headed. And by humans, I mean I can be very thick-headed. I won't even put that on anybody else. I'll put that on myself. Maybe not to this extent. I haven't committed any crimes. I've been needing punishment to this extent. But we tend to be very fickle people, very anal people, who kind of want to do our own thing until we get told otherwise. John Jones has been told otherwise, and he's not going to get told again. Yeah, he hasn't changed, and he's not going to get told again.
I don't know. I can't understand the psychological aspect of those people.
I'm with you.
It boggles me. I'm speechless for it.
It's fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, stuff like that.
Except in this case, it's fool me once, shame on you. Fool me once, shame on you.
Yeah, fool me three times, go away because I'm ashamed of you. Yeah, it's really what it's turning into for John Jones. But that's UFC 197 coming up in the near future, next couple weekends, April 23rd. We're also hearing some news, and we'll kind of stay on the UFC track, of the rematches going into UFC 200. And right now it has been established, and Dana White tweeted this out on March 30th just to confirm it, we are already getting the rematch between Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz for UFC 200. It's going to happen. It is official. I'm not really excited for it this soon after.
No, not this soon. I mean, I wouldn't have even been excited for a Rousey home fight that soon.
Right.
Hey, which I'm glad it's been a while, and I'm glad.
But, yeah, that one I'm getting a little more comfortable with because that was, what, November, December?
Yeah.
So 6 months later, 7 months later, a little bit, but definitely not 2 months later, 3 months later.
Yeah. Yeah, because most people don't even have that many fights in 2-3 months.
Yeah.
I think Rousey would fight once every 6 months or something.
Yeah.
And that's still, I mean, even when she was champion, that was considered a fighting champion. Because, for one, you got to have time to recuperate. You got to have time to train.
Yeah.
Get back in shape. And then go for your fight. That just seems too rushed.
Yeah. And there have been discussions coming out talking about that, you know, this is honestly, and I agree, there have been reports from Bleacher Report and whatnot, this is a lose-lose situation for both guys. If Nate Diaz loses, he loses the entire head of steam he's built shooting up to be a star after beating McGregor at 196.
Yeah.
All of your work, all the grinding you've done to have that moment to boost you to this level, gone. If McGregor loses, his image is irreparable. You don't come back. Chill or not, as cool as the guy is, as braggadocious as the guy is, at least moving up to 170, I think, weight class or not, if he loses this second fight, Dana White's lost another star.
Yeah.
And UFC's just gone. He's going to have to climb that totem pole back. And here's a quote from independent.ie's Jack D. Menendez, and I think you'll appreciate this quote. Quote, he was obsessed with finding Nate Diaz again. Obviously, UFC co-owner Lorenzo Fertitta and I tried to argue with him and say, let's go back down to 145 and defend your title. Or if you really want the Diaz fight that bad, do it at 155. But he wants to fight at 170. Even his coach, John Kavanaugh, tried to get him to get off of this rematch and off the 170-pound fight. But it's what he's wanted, and he wants to get it. McGregor is, I think this is a situation of being bullheaded. Again, we talk about being thick-headed people, being stubborn. I get you want to prove that you're a valuable fighter at an upper weight class, or kind of prove that the mark, the blemish on your record, is something you can rectify before going back down. I get that. But wouldn't you want to defend your title at UFC 200? Defend your fight. Do something you're comfortable with. Do the thing that, again, I may be speaking against the Conor McGregor mystique, the Conor McGregor mentality. Don't do anything easy. Do the difficult thing. I understand the appeal behind that. But defending your title is difficult enough. I get that you think you own the 145 weight division, and at this point, no one can really speak different to that. He's not wrong. But continue to prove that first before you go right back 3 months later to the 170. The only reason this makes sense to me is because he's already comfortable at that weight. Because he's been there preparing for a couple months previous. Mind you, this was a race up to 170, I'm sure, to get him ready for the Diaz fight in those 2 or 3 weeks. I guess he was at 155. For Dos Anjos. Either way, to have the opportunity to fight at that weight and to do it again so quickly so he doesn't have to adjust his eating, his cutting program, his training, all that, that's the only reason I understand that. And even for that logic, it is not worth what he could risk in this fight.
Now, does he have to be at 170 to fight Diaz?
Yes. Well, that's the fight they've agreed to. McGregor wanted to stay at the weight class he fought Diaz at last time. That means you are stepping up to fight the guy. He's not coming to your level.
You're stepping up to him.
Yeah, this is the opposite of Chris Cyborg, Ronda Rousey we've heard in years past, because Cyborg was going to have to go down. Yeah, which, by the way, she's in the UFC now. We'll jump into that in a second.
I'm not excited for that fight, though. I don't want that fight to happen anymore.
Yeah, you're not wrong. We'll get into her appearance in just a second. But, yeah, this is a fight that he wanted to be on Diaz's level. Like, there was no waiting on McGregor's side. He wanted to have that happen on Diaz's terms. And I get that he lost, so he doesn't have that leeway compared to Diaz. Like, Diaz won, so he can claim, you know, he can state, I want it to be done under these conditions. But so soon, and to do it at an upper weight class, it's a lose-lose, and I'm not happy about that. Yeah, the fight could be interesting again, but this is not UFC 200, I think anybody, the way anyone, especially Dana White and the Ferretti's, pictured it.
Yeah, because when four or five months ago, we got talking about UFC 200 and just how big of a fanfare it's probably going to be. Even then, right after the Holmes-Rousey fight, UFC was 200 was already, like, the day after the fight, UFC 200 was the confirmed time where they were going to come back and have the rematch.
Yeah.
And that's probably not going to happen. I know it's not going to happen. Ronda doesn't want to fight anybody but whoever's got the belt, and that would just be Miesha Tate.
Right.
So Miesha Tate, 3, 4, I've lost count.
17.
Yeah, something like that.
It basically feels like I'm playing universe mode in WWE.
Yeah, kind
of. They all rotate around. Sooner or later, we'll find somebody new. But I agree. That's the thing kind of with Holly Holm right now. She's in the same situation. Holly Holm had a chance to fight Chris Cyborg coming to UFC 198. And she said no. She said, I want my Tate rematch now. So, the rubber match is immediately coming. That rematch is coming up right now, coming up soon. Cyborg you know, Justine, she's facing up, I think, against Leslie Smith. She's 2-2 in the UFC, 8-6-1 in MMA. And of course, for Cyborg, she's 15-1 in her career overall. This will be her first fight in UFC. It's going to be taking place in Brazil. It's May 14th. And she's kind of talked about it this week at the press conference. And she said, quote, "I don't think it was too soon or too late for my appearance in the UFC. I think it was at the right time. I think everything that I went through in my career is going to culminate in this UFC and UFC 188. Excuse me. I've prepared very well, and I want to put on a great fight for everyone and bring a great knockout for Brazil." So Cyborg's ready to go. I think she's a little bit irritated that Holmes or Tate didn't want to take her on immediately, which the Tate fight, I kind of get. That's what Cyborg wants because she's proven that she's overall a stellar MMA fighter, but not in this organization yet. She's got to have a few prove-it fights.
Yeah.
But for Holmes to not want to face her is a little bit interesting because I know especially that's what your Dana White wants. You have these two. You could pitch this as a number one contenders fight. You got Holm. You've got Cyborg. Put them together. Whomever wins faces Tate.
I think it's still the idea of the, almost like with WWE's rematch clause, even though that's not a thing in the UFC.
Right.
You know, I think Holm deserves a chance to get her title back. And unfortunately, though, from there, she'd have to build herself back up if she loses again.
It's going to be tough to get back if she does.
She can.
Of course, being a boxer, she's got a great, you know, she's going to excel in this situation.
Yeah. And I hate to say, I was always wanting to say that a stand-up boxer would not do well in UFC. And they won't if whoever they're fighting with tries to go head-to-head with them.
Yeah.
Like Ronda Rousey did. You don't stand-up box with a stand-up boxer. Yep. You play your game. You take them to the ground. Misha Tate did that, and now she's the champion. So, I don't know. The women's division is going to be interesting to see coming up in UFC over the next 3 or 4 pay-per-views.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Now, mind you, some reports are coming through from Brazil, including from the general manager of UFC Brazil, Giovanni Decker, that many fighters declined to fight Cyborg. They didn't want anything to do fighting Cyborg. And the quote kind of comes through. Mind you, Cyborg is the current Invicta FC featherweight champion. She's cutting down to 140 for a catchweight with Leslie Smith. So she's coming down a little bit to kind of make this happen. But the quote from Decker is, quote, "We didn't think it would be impossible to have Cyborg at 198 because we knew someone would accept the fight. I won't mention names because I protect the fighters, but many athletes declined. Many names, really. You can say tens of fighters. But we were positive that someone would say yes." And Misha Tate at 135 is acknowledged wasn't one of the options, saying that, "I think that this fight will happen one day, but it wasn't the case. She wasn't a possibility. She's the champion right now, and this fight wouldn't make sense right now," which is fine. Again, we just talked about it. I agree with that. You got to prove yourself in the organization before you take on the champion. The champion's earned that right. That's okay.
Even if it's just one fight.
Right.
Your first fight cannot be a championship fight.
Right. No one pulls that weight, even someone as well-known and well-renowned as Chris Cyborg.
Yeah.
But to have that happen, to have tens of fighters turn that fight down, I'm curious what that means. I feel like, you know, barring a Michael Cole quote from the Attitude Era, is this symbolic? It's really not. It just means people are intimidated by Cyborg. And I'm not saying they're wrong to be that way, but to have tens of fighters. Now, of course, this is from the UFC general manager of Brazil, so there could be some hyperbole, some inflation going on. But to even have more than 3 or 4 fighters decline to fight with Cyborg at a catch weight, she's willing to cut down to 140 to take this belt or to take this fight, and people are turning it down. That proves by itself that she's got some weight to carry in this division. That if she makes a full turn to UFC, I don't know what the deal is with Invicta FC. If she has to, you know, basically sit down and vacate that title, how that works with her deal. But if she vacates that title and focuses fully in UFC, that's scary, because that means that her trip to the top is going to involve only a few people, and a lot fewer people than maybe some others are going to have to claim to get to that championship spot.
Yeah, if she gets the belt anytime soon, she's going to keep it for a while, because I don't think there's anybody in there. I'm saying this, and I'm probably going to end up being wrong, just like our last UFC fight picks. I don't think there's anybody that's going to be able to stop her. She's a fighting machine, and she is terrifying looking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to step in a ring with her.
Nope. I'm right there with you.
Nope. And I wanted the Rousey Cyborg fight just so bad, and now I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah, it's not going to look good. Now, mind you, for Cyborg to this point, the highest level in weight for UFC women is 135. Now, mind you, as I noted, Cyborg is cutting down to 140 to take this fight. She is currently in Invicta FC. I'll pull up the title that she is, but I believe it's a 150-155 for where she is at. She is the women's featherweight champion, which I believe is about 150-155. Yeah. So she is already above what the limit is currently in UFC for bantamweight. So she's going to have to make some adjustments unless UFC, and this is a possibility, I don't know what the market is for it or make what other athletes are there. Yeah, make class. A featherweight. Yeah, take over a featherweight division.
That'd be really hard.
It'd be tough, right?
I mean, they'd literally have to bring in fighters from outside companies to fight.
Yeah.
Or have people like Holm and Rousey up their weight to the class.
And I don't think either of them are interested in doing that.
No.
Especially Rousey, obviously, showing that she wanted Cyborg to come down to her level on the weight. But we'll see how that goes. Cyborg fights at 198 versus Leslie Smith. And, of course, we're waiting to see what goes on at 197 with Cormier and Jones. Of course, Jones, I believe the fight is off for the title, with Cormier being the title holder. But we'll see if Jones finds a replacement fight or if it's canceled entirely, waiting for another opportunity. And, of course, we get closer to July where UFC 200 is. We'll continue to give you some analysis of those fight announcements and our thoughts of positivity or negativity. Whichever way they go, we'll give them to you, because obviously we do that here on Podzilla 1985 Sports. We're going to go ahead and move on. I think we kind of wrapped up our UFC discussion for today. The other big discussion, because I know what other thing I mentioned at the start. God, we've had so many weighty shows. Just even in the short time we've been doing the sports podcast, we've had some heavy shows.
Yeah.
I think it's because I'm trying to escape that mentality of sports radio, you know, being this sometimes really petulant thing of, oh, this guy's going here, this fight's going on here, and this is why this is a good thing, this is why this team will be the champion and you don't know it. I'd like to cover some things that are a little bit more intricate, a little more in-depth than that, but by God, sports can be... This is escapist. Like, this is supposed to be an escapism thing.
Yeah.
This stuff gets dark fast.
Yeah, especially if you're going to talk about the story. I think you are.
Yeah, well, we're going to hold off on that for right now. Just for my own sanity, if anything. You know, journalistic integrity be damned for right now. I think I'm just going to move on to the NCAA Final Four because that makes me feel better about myself.
Really?
Well... All things considered, I'm okay with being a bad prognosticator and a bad predictor of sporting brackets compared to being a guy that has to talk about someone threatening a basketball player's wife through Twitter.
Okay.
I think of the two options, I still feel much better about me being bad at calling games than that. But the Final Four is broken down. I got two of them right, and I'll take that for what it's worth. I predicted two of the Final Four participants in UNC and in Oklahoma, so... That works for me. Of course, my champion has been well out of the fight since the first round, so, you know, whatever that may be, but...
Freaking Michigan.
Yep, Michigan State, man. It's a beautiful thing. By a beautiful thing, I mean, it's March.
Yeah.
But the Final Four is going on today. Actually, we're recording this around 10 o'clock, 10:40 right now, about 30 minutes through the podcast, but the games will be on tonight, April 2nd, with the championship game on April 4th. It's the Final Four starting off, both games on TBS, actually the whole Final Four on TBS. 6:09 is the start of Villanova, Oklahoma, the two seeds of the South and the West facing off. And then at 8:49 following that game, it's the East and Midwest teams of North Carolina, the only one seed to advance, and Syracuse, the 10 seed, an ACC matchup between North Carolina and Syracuse to determine the two teams participating in Monday's Final Four championship game. All of these, of course, in Houston, Texas at NRG Stadium, home of my Houston Texans. So, hey-o. I've been wrong about, as I said, I picked UNC, I picked Oklahoma. I was right about those. I've been really wrong about the other two. I've been picking against Villanova basically this entire bracket, just because it's Villanova. This is a team that, even when they were in the big, you know, the old Big East, and they'd go on some runs, they haven't won a tournament since 1985. This is a team that would go on a run, get hot, but wouldn't make it through that upper echelon. They'd either face a Kansas or an Oklahoma or someone that could knock them, you know, someone that is bigger, stronger, is going to knock them out. The only time they won a title was in 1985 when they got past Patrick Ewing. It was a situation where they were able to get by the bigger, stronger athletes in that situation. And Buddy Hield's looking darn good. He picked up the Oscar Robertson Player of the Year award. He's a senior, which makes me really happy as a nostalgic person who likes upperclassmen in college basketball. We never seen any more.
It's a unicorn.
I know. Between him and Denzel Valentine, the Michigan State guard, he picked up the Associated Press Player of the Year award. at this point, I'm sure it's probably going to be one of those two for the Wooden Award for National Player of the Year. So I'm comfortable with that. I'm happy with that. You're right, it's a unicorn, because it's not going to be back next season.
No.
We got Jason Tatum coming from Chaminade in St. Louis to Duke. It's going to be another year of the freshman, but I miss upperclassmen basketball. Anyway, it's going to be a fun game between Villanova and Oklahoma. These are two tried and true teams. Of course, we know to Oklahoma having Buddy Hield, the senior, leading their charge. I've been talking about it all this whole tournament. I thought Villanova would make it a little bit further than just the first round. People were knocking them out first or second round. I thought they would lose to Miami in the Sweet 16. And I wasn't ashamed of that. Now, they steamrolled Miami, so they made me look like a fool, which isn't really difficult to do this time of year. But they got by Kansas in a really tight game. It was only a 5-point game, and they beat Bill Self, the NCAA coach of the year, pick up that win.
They beat the only other team that I could see winning the championship.
Yeah. Kansas was really one of those dogs in the hunt a lot of people had. Mind you, I saw a lot of Kentucky brackets, but I think that's more fandom bias or just recent relevance compared to actual logic for the season. I didn't think they were a contender for the title, but they've fought a tough bracket. They've fought a tough way through, and they've made it look good in some parts. Now, Oklahoma kind of steamrolling their way through Oregon. I thought Oregon would look pretty good. I thought last week when I talked about it on my show, Saturday Morning Express, on CMO ESPN 92.9 FM, 1220 AM, 9 to 10 AM Saturday mornings, I predicted that Oregon was going to pick up that, or was going to be a close game. I thought Oklahoma would get through, but it would be a tight contest. I think I put the spread at 6 points. No, 80-68. Oklahoma kind of owned that game most of the way. Wasn't a challenge. Now, on the other side, for UNC, they didn't have too much of a fight against Notre Dame, 88-74, and then Syracuse beating Virginia. Virginia wilted late, made it look bad in that 68-62 loss to Syracuse, and now all four of those teams in the ACC, by the way, so we're getting a lovely, lovely ACC title run through the other side of the bracket. These are familiar bedfellows. These guys are no strangers to each other. They're both in the same division. Roy Williams and Jim Boeheim have been coaching against each other for years, so if anything, that other side of the bracket's going to be very interesting. But these are teams that have had droughts. Villanova's not won a title since 1985. Oklahoma hasn't made a Final Four appearance since 1992. Syracuse won in 03 with Carmelo Anthony, but that's the last time they've won a title. North Carolina, 2009. It's been a few years for some of these, many more than others. But these teams have had a little bit of a drought, respectively. So at least we're going to have some fun with that. We're not seeing a Kansas-Kentucky. We're not seeing a situation where, oh, we've seen these guys before, whatever, I don't really care. This is going to be fun. I think it is fun that we've gone this far. We have a unique medley of teams. You got the Big 12 team with the senior leadership. You got the Villanova team kind of showing that old Big East mentality of guards that can shoot a team that's wily and has the experience. North Carolina, of course, having the depth of North Carolina that they always do, and the Syracuse being the underdog. Despite Syracuse really being a very popular team and a team that's looked good at times in the ACC, the team that wasn't supposed to make this tournament. They weren't supposed to be here at all. They make their way through to the Final Four. It's going to be fun. I want to watch tonight, I'll tell you that much.
What time are the games tonight?
Time starts 6:09 for Villanova, Oklahoma, and then 8:49 for North Carolina, Syracuse.
See, I don't really care to watch North Carolina game. I'm not going to lie. I have bitter feelings towards North Carolina, especially after the 03. Or 04. Was it the 04 or 05?
The Illinois?
Yeah.
Yeah, 04.
I'm still bitter from that.
Yeah, I can see that.
But now the Villanova game I'm going to watch, and I'm pulling for Villanova.
I made my prediction earlier today that I was going to go Villanova over Oklahoma. Now, mind you, there's no rationale to this. Really, Buddy Hield could own this game, and it's very well possible. I'm not taking that pick based upon logic. I'm taking that pick based upon being mad that I've been wrong so many times about it and just going with it.
The thing is, there's been no logic in this tournament at all.
Other than North Carolina, no.
Yeah. This has been... I said last year was a crazy tournament. This year's tournament was just as crazy.
I'd say a little bit crazier in some cases.
Yeah, especially with Michigan State getting knocked out in the first round.
Hooray, number two seed. Hooray, favorite national championship pick from everybody, myself included. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think the Villanova-Oklahoma game could be the more interesting of the two, and I'm going to pick Villanova to move on. Despite themselves, maybe, I pick North Carolina to move on. I think the run for Syracuse stops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they've had some early luck having to face a 15 seed and a 10 seed, and then, of course, or 11 seed, excuse me, and then having to face Virginia in the Elite Eight. But Virginia kind of being a weaker of those number one seeds. Like, it's no skin off my nose to see Virginia fall in that number one seed position. But I think North Carolina, these are, as we said, they're familiar opponents. Roy Williams, if anybody, has the depth and has the know-how to get past Jim Boeheim's Syracuse team. So I think the orange stop here, and it's going to be North Carolina, and I'm going to say Villanova. Despite myself, I'm going to say Villanova picks it up and then goes to the championship game.
Agreed. And I've been doing the round-by-round challenges online.
Okay.
And I'm actually picking Nova to win.
Really?
Yeah. By this logic, I had in one of my brackets Kansas and North Carolina in the championship game and Kansas winning.
Okay.
Because in my head and just talking to everybody and doing all the research, Kansas was the team that I could see really beating North Carolina, especially in the championship game.
Okay.
Excuse me. So by that logic, you would think that a team like Kansas who got beat by Villanova could stand a chance against North Carolina. And that's the beautiful thing about the tournament. It all depends on who comes to the game that day, who plays well, who's hitting, who's not hitting, who's cold.
Yep.
And it varies every day.
It does. And for me, like where I stand right now about the whole thing, I'm okay with being wrong if Oklahoma goes on. Don't get me wrong. I would see a Big 12 team win a title, not named Kansas. That would be awesome. And even just to make a championship appearance, I would be fine with that. If Villanova goes on and it's North Carolina versus Villanova, I'm taking North Carolina. I think that experience, that ACC power, Roy Williams being a coach, I think all of that edge is going to be there. If Oklahoma moves on, I could see Oklahoma picking up a title, and I think I'd be giddy. I would be so happy about that, just to see someone who hasn't been in an unfamiliar face. Now, mind you, a team that has had up and downs. Of course, they made the Final Four in 2002. They had some luck in the last, 6 or 7 years with Blake Griffin coming through, but this is a team that it's not a perennial favorite. It's not a team you see every year. It's not a team you're burnt out on yet. To see a team with senior leadership making that happen, I think would make me really excited, if only for 1 year, to see the nostalgia of old school basketball and the NCAAs coming to fruition, with a championship title.
Yeah, that's my big thing. I want to see a team who's not had the success of North Carolina, essentially. I mean, and these other teams, they have had some success, but not to the extent of North Carolina, like you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
How many titles have they won in the last 20 years?
North Carolina?
Yeah.
20 years actually might be a little bit limited with what they've done.
Okay, so let's go to, I'm trying to think back. So 2000.
I'm pulling up their
So, all right, so right history. Around like 12 years. Going back to the Illinois game.
I think it's only been two or three. Is it three?
Illinois, Tyler Hansborough.
Right. Let's see.
Maybe been two.
No, only two. 2005, 2009.
Yeah.
Before that, 57, 82, 93. Were theirs, but they had runner-ups in 46, 68, 77, 81. Final Four is probably what you're thinking. Since 2000, they've had 2000, 2005, 2008, 2009, 2016.
Yeah.
And they've made the Elite Eight since 2005. It's 05, 07, 08, 09, 11, 12, 16. So, yeah, they're perennially there. They are participants. Just not always at the end of the day being there for the Final Four, but they're a team that you expect. Everyone picks them at some point. They're a team that if they make the tournament and if they look good coming into the tournament,
they're going to get picked.
You feel pretty confident they can at least make it this far. Yeah, they're favored. Syracuse, up and down the same way. There are some years they've looked rough, but there are years like when Connecticut and them were beating each other up in the Big East, whoever won that was going to be the one you picked moving forward.
Oh, yeah. And it's, I'm trying to think back. I don't remember Oklahoma being this far into the tournament.
No, as I said, they won a tie, or they made a Final Four in 88 in 2002.
I'm trying to sit back and think. I don't think they've made it. I don't remember making past. Oh, God. Oklahoma's just one of those teams. I don't remember them making it deep into the tournament at all. Maybe second round.
I had it pulled up earlier today, the last time they had made it this far, other than outside of 2002. Like, what times they have looked good in the tournament, or how far they've made in the tournament. I've got it pulled up now. They made the Final Four 2002, 2016, of course, this year in the 1988. They made the Elite Eight in 2009, and they made it in 2003, the year after their Final Four appearance. They made the Sweet 16 last year, but before then it wasn't past 19 or 2009.
Yeah.
So it's only this really last year and this year being their quote-unquote success, and then this year they've made that run to the Final Four. So Heck, they haven't even won a conference tournament championship since 2003. They haven't won the Big 12 as a whole since 2005. So this is a team that's hungry to see some success, and so far they're getting the brakes falling their way for it.
Yeah. So, now I'm picking Nova, but I would love to see Oklahoma.
Yeah, like I said, you are not going to see me complain one bit if Oklahoma wins the championship. In fact, I'm going to be really happy just to see a new face or a new team, if only for a year maybe, because, of course, Buddy Hield graduating, some of this depth is moving on from Leo Kruger's team. So they're looking for Erlon Kruger's team, excuse me. So they're looking for some depth. But just to see it happen for 1 year, to see that excitement and see someone new come to the forefront would be really nice.
And I think it's why I enjoyed the tournament last year. I was rooting Wisconsin the entire way.
Yeah.
And Kaminsky?
Yeah, Frank Kaminsky.
I loved watching him play.
Yep.
And I hate Louisville with a passion.
You're not the only one.
I've always hated Louisville. I'm not a Kentucky fan, so it makes no sense why I would hate.
I'm a Tennessee fan. They fall into it by proxy. I hate Kentucky. I hate Louisville. They're fine. I mean, I like Rick Pitino. I respect him as a coach, maybe a lot more before this current situation that's going on down there. But it's an organization like, there's nothing they've done directly to me to make me hate them. Just who they're affiliated with and who their rival is that makes me mad.
Yeah. It's the state. It really is.
Yeah. This is the Kentucky just leaves a sour taste in everyone's mouth.
I say that yet. That year that Murray had that great run.
Oh, right.
I did root for them.
Yeah. Well, it's the OVC team. That falls back to.
I got to root for the small guys.
Yeah.
So anytime Wichita State's up there.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, that's always fun to see them make a run. Actually made it a little bit further this year than I think most people expected. So
always. Yeah. Always with that school.
Don't count them out, especially going against Vandy winning by 20. Good Lord. Anyway, so your prediction is Villanova.
Yeah.
Mine's North Carolina currently, but we both are on the boat that Oklahoma winning wouldn't bother us.
No.
There you go. There's our Final Four predictions. You'll tune in next Saturday, and we'll find out how that goes to see if we're right or not. I'm accepting I'm probably wrong. It's not new to me anymore. I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, after the last predictions we made,
We'll go into that later as we cry into our drinks. But we've got a few minutes left. Because I said I was going to abbreviate this. We might extend a little bit further, get closer to the hour, because at least just to acknowledge the situation, how much it bothers me. So, situation going on. Yes, we're going to end on a depressing note. I'm sorry to all of you out there. Currently, this information comes from NBC4 in Southern California, of course, where Chris Paul and his wife, Jada, live. The Los Angeles Police Department is investigating death threats made on Twitter against Los Angeles Clippers point guard Chris Paul and his wife, Jada Crawley, according to the Los Angeles Times. The threat came on March 14th when a Twitter user wrote, this quote, @CP3, "If I knew where you lived, I'd probably kill your wife and frame you for it. I watched Dateline, I'd get away with it." It was immediately reported, of course, to Clippers team security. They alerted Paul and the LAPD. The LAPD is looking into it, and this level of threat is new to Chris Paul, but the harassment on Twitter has been a little bit more escalated. And people have been kind of mocking his wife, jabbing at things like that, but no one's threatened to kill anybody until now.
I don't get it.
I mean,
does he think they can't track him over the internet?
Good Lord, probably not. He probably thinks he's got some proxy on that he can pull this off or he's not going to be traced. Good Lord, for everyone's sake, I hope he's wrong. But this has been a discussion going on in sports for probably a couple of years now, but it's been more tilted toward young people being on Twitter and making bad decisions for themselves. Like your Johnny Manziel. It's like your athletes that just spout off at the mouth, put out something there inflammatory, and get themselves in trouble. This isn't that situation. This is an athlete who, for all intents and purposes, very well respected. Chris Paul, a great athlete, very big in his community in LA. Not like he's going out there to make people mad. And for someone to come across Twitter and threaten his wife's life like that. One, I think it shows a multitude of things. It shows one, and we talk about this a lot across the Podzilla 1985 podcast, the anonymous nature of the internet and how people get puffed up chest and think they're big and bad behind a keyboard, behind a monitor, or behind a cell phone. This guy, unless he is an authentic wacko, is not going to go up to anyone in public and say, "Oh yeah, man, I'd kill your wife. I watch Dateline, I'd frame you for it, and I'd get away with it." No one rationally says that. No one sane rationally says that. Now, again, all these things are depending on whom this person is, when they catch him and what type of psychological analysis they put him through. But no one with any right mind is going to go up in any form, even on Twitter. I don't care if I'm anonymous or not. You may not know who I am, but I am at Cody Sandusky on Twitter. You're not going to see at Cody Sandusky on Twitter, sure as heck with my name on it, but in general saying, oh yeah, man, if I knew where you live, I'd kill your wife, Tanner, and I'd get away with it because I watch television shows on ABC and I could frame you for it. Why? Where in anyone's mind does this come across as a rational method of communication or even a close to sane thing to put on the internet?
It goes back to, like, Shannon, me and Shannon talked about it a lot. And the internet is a vile, vile place. And as much as I'm there anymore, just because, like, Asa and Jesse, and I think you to an extent have talked it up, I'm on Reddit a lot anymore. I spend a lot of free time there. And let me tell you, there are some sick and disgusting, vile people on that site. On the internet, just period.
Yeah, well, I'll borrow from Obi-Wan. You'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy as the internet.
Yeah. And if you want proof to that, don't go to Reddit. I mean, because you really got to look for it there. Go to a place like 4chan or something like that, and you can see exactly how bad it is.
Well, you have to look for it on Reddit now. That wasn't always the case.
Yeah,
as it has been talked about in the recent past. I think it was on the Tuesday show with Jesse and some of them talking about the fact that Reddit, some of those places have banned fat people hate and things like that. But you mentioned 4chan. I haven't been on 4chan in years, and there are many, many reasons for that. Notwithstanding what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it fits right into that. People think just because they're on the internet that they can say whatever they want and there's no repercussions.
And currently, unfortunately, there's not for some of these people.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you make a physical threat to somebody online, there should be repercussions to it.
Yeah.
As soon as you make that threat, a day later, there should be somebody knocking at your door.
Yeah. And I'm thankful that it looks like in this case, the LAPD is taking this very seriously. They are taking this as if it is a physical threat face-to-face to the person, which it should be handled that way. And it's not always the case. Now, mind you, different situations, different things. Of course, cyberbullying is a thing. We hear about this all the time, especially in the recent past or our current, history with technology, how you become more anonymous. It's become more integrated into our lives. You can pick on people more that way. But not to this extent. Or heavens, I hope not. If you've ever received a death threat via Twitter, please email us at podzilla1985@gmail.com. There, I put in our plug for the email today for the most ridiculous topic. Please don't. I really hope you haven't. If you have and you do email us, I'm going to be even more sad about this than I already am because it's such a ridiculous premise. And yet, the more I think about it, the less surprised I am because of things like you said, like Reddit. I don't post a lot, but I'm a very, very readily available browser of Reddit. I have, but the things I follow are very limited. Like, I'm a big college football fan, so I'm on the college football Reddit. I'm a wrestling fan, so I'm on the Squared Circle subreddit. I normally limit my scope of viewing to things that are maybe less malicious, or if they are, for more comical reasons. Like, the college football subreddit has Trash Talk Friday, which is all caps screaming, lots of swearing at other people's teams just because they're other people's teams. It's meant to be over the top and ridiculous. It is. It's fine. Things like this don't belong in human society, but they exist, they're going to continue happening, but what benefit does it have at this point? And this was something that Matt Chernoff from NBC Sports said earlier today, actually. This is just another sign of what benefit do athletes have being on social media? The detriments seem to far outweigh the benefits of any high-profile person being on social media because it leaves them to be a target of verbal abuse, a target of now physical threats against family. It's a great promotional tool. And, for myself, you, our show, things like that. It's a way to reach out, to stay on top of the pulse of things. Like myself, a big sports fan, a lot of my news comes from Twitter. What benefit does someone like Chris Paul have to be out there and to receive a threat on his wife's life?
Well, the good thing is it happens less than what is put out there.
Heavens, I hope so.
I mean, if that was the case where every athlete was having death threats brought against them and their families, you would think they would be told to stay off of social network.
Yeah, you see people, in mass leave. You have LeBron James situations, but on a larger level and not just for the playoffs.
Yeah, and it gives them a connection to their fans. I understand 100% why they do it.
Right. And I'm not someone that's mad that they do. Happy they do.
I must say, I think on not so much on Twitter, but on Instagram, I follow, I don't know how many Cardinal players, like their official accounts. I know.
Uncle Charlie.
Yeah, yeah. Uncle Charlie, I got Yachty's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Even though his doesn't have the official badge, I don't know why he never got that. Probably, poor guy probably just doesn't know how to do it.
Or poor I doesn't care.
Yeah, probably just doesn't care.
He's like, who's faking my life? What was I just saw one of his a couple months ago was he and his wife on their anniversary at the Blues game. It's yeah. Like, who's going to fake me, some guy being at a Blues game for the anniversary with his wife? Like, if you're that desperate to impersonate an athlete, you do you. Yeah. Yachty's just like, whatever. It's me. Believe it.
So, I mean, I understand. It gives a connection to the fans, and it's fun. Especially, like, some of the stuff they post, like, at least for the Cardinals, they're quite comical.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, it's not an internet problem so much. It is a people problem.
Yeah.
If, I don't know, somewhere along the line, some people started thinking this was okay to do this, and I don't get it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with the anonymity that's involved, there's not a great way to bring people in check unless it goes to this level, and there has to be legal ramifications. I wish it weren't that way, because you're right, this is a humanity problem, this is a person problem. And just my soapbox for the day, listeners of PZ85, if you're on the internet, in whatever form you are, if you use your real name like I do, if you don't use real name like PZ85's Mr. 100, whatever method you browse the internet, be nice to other people. Don't threaten people's wives. Don't be a jerk. Thank you. From Podzilla 1985. The more you know, insert star graphic here from NBC in the 90s.
Well, that's a nice PSA there.
Yeah,
yeah,
I do my best sometimes. Basically, so don't be a douche. There, I'll come off the soapbox and be real.
Bringing it back to PZ85.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Well, I mean, you can only hide behind that for so long. It's ridiculous that this is a thing we have to address as adults, as humans. If this guy's an adult, he, as far as we know, he might be some 14-year-old kid.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah, some kid that's hopped up on Mountain Dew playing Call of Duty. We don't know. It could be, it may not be. Good Lord, for his sake, I hope not. But then again, I think maybe if it was immature enough to make a stupid thing like that, I'd feel a little bit better than him being like a 32-year-old man in L.A. Like, there's no redeeming this situation. It just comes down to stop being dumb on the internet. Leave other people to live their lives. Even the people that were, on the grand scheme, a little less threatening, because you had some people in the last year, so like making fun of his wife. Like, someone got on Twitter, said she had like a huge nose, looks like a dude or something. I don't know. Excuse me, but comparatively, that's better? Question mark. I'm not a fan of it. It shouldn't happen on any scale.
Yeah,
this should not happen. Let people be people. Be nice to people. But if you're doing that compared to threatening the dude's wife with a murder, maybe it's an easier pill to swallow. I don't know. I feel like right now, as we close the show, I feel like Jon Stewart when all the cases started breaking a couple years ago between Mike Brown, Eric Garner, and Freddie Gray. Like, there's no good way to end the show. Everything is sad. Everything's terrible in the world, and I hate myself.
Yeah. Oh, God, I remember watching that. That was...
Yeah.
He's right.
My favorite quote from him in that whole situation was during the Eric Garner case where the police officer, there would be no charges filed. He said, if comedy equals tragedy plus time, I need more effing time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is. But...
We had to end this on a sad note.
No, we're going to end it on a positive note. Baseball starts Sunday.
Or
in your case, if you're listening, it starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
At noon. Sunday, April 3rd at noon. Cardinals, Pittsburgh Pirates open up the season on ESPN. Adam Wainwright, Francisco Liriano is the first game. Go to your local television satellite provider. Turn on your channel that has ESPN on it. Turn on your radio to a radio station I won't mention because they're not mine. And listen to the Cardinals game. Oh, that's my one beef. You will never hear me promote where the Cardinals are at on the radio.
Yeah.
They don't pay me. But it exists.
It exists. It's out there. It's somewhere.
The TuneIn Radio app. Subscribe to the TuneIn Radio app. They have a premium package, $7.99 a month. If you want to get rid of your Spotify, your Pandora, go to that. You can listen to baseball live. You listen to football live. You can listen to Premier League soccer matches live.
Give me one second. I got some changes to make.
There you go. I've got to make a very related phone call.
I downloaded that app a couple months ago so I could listen to Coast AM with George Norrie. And
good choice.
I did not know that was a possibility.
Yeah, they stream minor league baseball all season long for free.
Yeah.
Like, I listened to a lot of Redbirds games last season just to keep tabs on our minor league guys. But yeah, they started that, I think it's this season, where you can listen to MLB games live as a part of their premium subscription package.
Yep, I got to change that subscription.
Yeah, I've thought about dropping my Hulu or my Spotify to go pick that up. But
oh no, I'm not doing that because I'm dropping that. I'm cutting the cable next month.
There you go.
So I'm going strictly internet.
Over the top. It's a beautiful thing. And as we move on, those are things we'll discuss. I'm sure we'll get into that a little further on through the show's history. But talking about over-the-top streaming options for sports and things like that, we've inserted a little bit of off-topicness for the end of the show. It's not a PZ85 broadcast if we don't go off-topic a little bit.
Oh, don't I know. Listen to the show Thursday. You'll find out.
Yeah, the paranormal version of Tanner Thursday. It came out on Thursday, well, I guess Friday morning, but it is on Podzilla1985.com. You can find us on iTunes, search Podzilla1985. Other audio apps, I use Podcast Addict on Android. You can find Podzilla1985 real easy through their search engine. That's how I listen to all of our shows. Podbean has an app. Not going to recommend it. Podzilla Addict, go to that one. Of course, iTunes, you can catch us all on Twitter at Podzilla1985.com. You can look up our Twitter handles on the cast and crew page.
I still got to get Shannon to change mine. He's still got the old one on there.
Does he? Okay. Well, yeah. Well, Shannon, do that. I know you may or may not be listening this far into the show, but go do that.
Yeah.
Change the man's Twitter handles. The man himself. Or, well, some characters involving that.
Yeah.
So do that. You can also email us, as always, Podzilla1985@gmail.com with your thoughts, your suggestions. We always want to hear from you guys. Give us a rating on iTunes if you can. Go to redbubble.com. We got the attire. I've actually missed the first order for Lindsay, but I need to make an order for my t-shirt. If we get a Podzilla 85 Sports t-shirt, we might give one away on here.
That would be a really great idea. Yeah. We need to get her to do that.
Yeah, we'll talk to her about that.
Yeah.
We've got things in the works. We're hopefully working on things. Lindsay, I know you're not listening. I'm sorry in advance that I sprung this on you.
Actually,
but
she might actually listen to it because, you know, sports and all that. Not.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She is athletic.
She is athletic. So, Lindsay, t-shirt. We'll talk. But that is all we have for this week's now almost a full hour edition of Podzilla 1985 Sports. I say things, I don't always mean them, obviously, because we kind of go on anyway. The beauty of podcasting, we can hit stop and start whenever we want.
Yeah.
Tanner, as always, sir, thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
Always fun.
Yeah.
We'll keep you posted via the social media on next week's show. I have a bachelor party to attend next Saturday, so our recording time might be up in the air. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will have something to present to you. We're not going to leave you off, on, and off again for Podzilla 1985 Sports. We know you like it. We know we like you listening to it, so we're going to give you something to listen to. But until next week, this is Cody Sandusky saying thanks for tuning in to Podzilla 1985 Sports. Stay safe. Knock back in your recliner because there's plenty of sports to watch this weekend. We'll talk to you guys next time.